You are listening to Studio 41.
Hello and welcome to Quiz Time India. I'm your host and quizmaster Aditya. Here is to another episode of Quizzing and Trivia. But before that, there is an important announcement. We are opening this podcast to the audience. For our Independence Day special, we are inviting you, yes, you listener, onto the show. If you like the sound of that, send us an email, drop a hi at studio41podcast@gmail.com. with the subject line Independence Day Podcast. That is all. Baki aur kya? Follow us on social media at @QuizTimeIndia on Instagram. And if you would like to hear more about our other and upcoming podcast, @PodcastStudio41 on both Twitter and Instagram, @PodcastStudio41 and Studio 41 on Facebook. Now is the time for some quizzing. First up is last week's question. Last week's guest was Omkar Yargudi, and here is Omkar's question.
The James Bond film Casino Royale features a scene where James Bond is trying to follow the villain who's called Le Chiffre, okay? And in one scene, he glances at his Sony Ericsson phone, his huge product placement back in the very blatant product placement back in the day. But he glances at his Sony Ericsson phone, and on the screen, he can see a pointed icon that shows in which direction he is heading, and also an interactive map to give him some sense of bearing, to give him some sense of where his destination is. So a fellow by the name of Garrett Camp watched this and it stuck with him. A few years later, he would remember this while thinking of his travel woes while he was living in San Francisco. Okay, all of this, put all of this together, led to the birth of something that a lot of us may have made use of. So what did it lead to the birth of?
The answer to Omkar's question was Uber, the app with which you can call a cab. And the one who got the prize was Anuradha. Anuradha, congratulations. Your prize will be on its way soon enough. And thank you so much for taking part in the quiz. And if, like Anuradha, you too would like to take part in the quiz and win yourself an amazing prize, all you have to do is wait for the audience question at the end of this week's episode. Send in your answers to @QuizTimeIndia on Instagram or also on the other social media handles which I said earlier. Now for this week's quiz. This week's guest is Sai Ganesh. Sai works in marketing and is from Bangalore. He's also a part of Team 9, the folks behind the YouTube show India Wants to Know and also the India Wants to Know Sunday Zoom quizzes. Do check out their work. They have been trying out some fun things around quizzing. Without any further ado, here is Quiz Time India with Sai Ganesh. All right, Sai, welcome to Quiz Time India. Thank you so much for joining us today. It's been a pleasure sitting through your quizzes, the Zoom quizzes, watching you guys on YouTube, and it's good to have you here today.
Thank you so much. It's a pleasure to be on this podcast. We've been following your podcast for a while now. So thank you so much for inviting me on this.
All right. So since you heard the podcast, you know the idea is fairly simple.
Yes.
I have a list of questions with me. I've asked you to prepare a list of questions.
Sure.
And we'll take turns asking each other these questions. And we can take as many hints as possible. We can take as much time as possible. The idea is that at the end of these volleys of questions, we both and with us the audience get to learn some new facts, some new trivia, and whatever is your line of thought during the questions, you are encouraged to share it with us, share it with the listeners. Does that make sense?
Sure. Great. Yeah, I would be really excited to do this because it's the first time I'm actually doing a quiz on a podcast. Interestingly, around 4 years ago, I did try to start a quizzing podcast. And that sort of segued into a pop culture podcast, but died after a few episodes. This is something I've been looking forward to a very, very long time.
All right. So, Sai, I'll start out with your first question and let me know if you're ready.
I'm ready, yes.
All right, Sai. So, your first question is slightly straightforward. Sylvester D'Acunha of the advertising and sales promotion company had gone through 712 babies to find the perfect baby for a brand called Amul.
Right.
So Amul, we all know, was coming up with a promotion and they wanted a baby to be their mascot. And Sylvester Dacuna was in charge of finding the perfect baby to be the Amul baby, which we now obviously all of us know and have seen. And he had a tough time finding the baby until he finally settled on a little girl called Shobha.
Okay.
Shobha was the first Amul baby.
Oh, interesting.
Many years later, color printing came up.
Mm-hmm.
And now they had to look for another baby. At that time, they shortlisted Smita, who was Shobha's younger sister. Shobha, much later in her life, went on to become Miss Kolkata. And this is in year 1977. And Smita, who was the second baby, went on to become a Miss India runner-up. But it is their third sibling who has been the subject of Amul billboards many times. Can you tell me, who is this famous third sibling of Shobha and Smita?
Shobha, Smita. Can you tell me the time period again?
So this must be early 60s, early to mid 60s. So they were based out of Bombay, not originally from Bombay, but the family was in Bombay. That is when Sylvester Dacuna met a certain gentleman who was Shobha, Smita and third sibling's father. And he asked that man that, you know, you have a baby, right? Can I just see some pictures? He saw the pictures and he's like, yeah, I think I can use these. And that's how it started.
So to be honest, when you mentioned the name Sylvester Dacuna, like a typical quizzer, I got excited because I knew the name immediately. Mm-hmm. Because Sylvester is a very famous name in the advertising world. And I've been in marketing. So, and he's known obviously for largely the Amul campaigns. But then slowly I realized this is a googly and it's not really anything to do with Amul. But given the hints, since you mentioned two sisters, and somewhere while explaining, you also mentioned that they did not necessarily originate from Bombay, but came from a different state. And the timeline, I'm going to say the Mangeshkars?
No, no. So there are three siblings, at least three siblings that we know of in this entire situation. Shobha, Smita, we don't know where they are right now.
Okay.
All I know is Miss Kolkata in 1977 was the elder one, Shobha, and then Smita was Miss India runner-up. Their third sibling has been, as I said, a subject of Amul billboards many times. Now, I think a hint that I can give you is the third sibling is still in the news, is quite often in the news, and maybe from the world of politics.
Maybe from the world of politics. I was thinking of probably, again, Bombay and Maharashtra, so I'm not getting to politics. So maybe I'll think of Bollywood stars again who probably crossed over to politics. So I'm going to say Hema Malini.
Okay, no. All right, I'll tell you. The first time he came on the billboard was because of his marriage.
Sorry, is it a he or a she?
It's a he. Okay, I'll just give that out.
Okay.
It's a he. The first time he appeared on the billboard was because of his marriage.
My first name comes from mind when you mention name that appeared because of marriage is Robert Waldrop, but doesn't make sense.
That's a good guess, actually. Anything else that you can think of? So far, we have politics, a politician getting married.
So let's go somewhere else. Let's think of something on sports. Maybe Shobha Dey's husband? I don't know. I'm trying to think of somebody who's famous.
No. Okay, the second time he featured on the Amul billboard was because of a speech that he gave, which got viral on social media. A speech that he gave at Oxford University.
Is it Shashi Tharoor?
You are absolutely right.
Oh, wow.
It is Shashi Tharoor. Shashi Tharoor had two other siblings, Shobha Tharoor and Smita Tharoor. And Shobha was the first Amul baby. Smita was the second Amul baby. And the third Tharoor, although he wasn't an Amul baby, did end up on the Amul billboard multiple times. The first time he ended up was because of his marriage to Sunanda Pushkar. Those were simpler times. And that got national coverage.
Oh, that's interesting. I would have thought actually he would have made an appearance much before his marriage, given his United Nations and the fact that he was running for Secretary General one point in time. But interesting. It's really, really interesting. Something I did not know of earlier.
I just came across this recently, and apparently he had tweeted in 2015 that the entire family has been part of the Amul chain now. So yeah, that was the question.
Oh, that's really, really
Shashi
fascinating.
Shashi Tharoor.
Yeah, that's very interesting. Thanks, Adya. That's a really good question. I didn't make the connection between Shashi Tharoor and Amul before this. So yeah, today I learned TIL, as I say.
Yes. Now it's your turn. I'm looking forward to your question.
Sure. So I'm going to start with something that's COVID related, right?
Great.
So one of the things that's happening because of COVID is that due to social distancing, people are not able to gather in groups in large places. And this has obviously affected different lines of business. And one of the biggest lines of business is affected is cinema, right? So
yes.
Across the world, there is now restriction on shooting for film or television. And Shujit Sarkar recently put up a post where he said that he was worried about something that is going to change in Bollywood because of the post-COVID situation. So what are filmmakers currently worried about with respect to cinema, given the restrictions around shooting in the post-COVID era? So in one line, what is Bollywood afraid of?
And this is only like pertaining to Bollywood, or is it in general world cinema is worried about it?
Interestingly, that's an interesting question. Actually, it affects world cinema, cinema across the globe, right? So Australia has in fact come down in this context fairly harsh on the restrictions. So it is going to be a reality across the world and not just in Bollywood. It's just that Bollywood has, you know, spoken about this much before anybody else.
Okay. So this is in the shooting process. So there's always the risk of infecting the other person, which is primarily what it is.
Yes.
What was the exact phrase, if you could tell me?
So the exact question like, is Bollywood afraid of in the post-COVID era? Right. So Shujit Sarkar has said that, you know, how the world of cinema now conducts shooting is to be seen and planned. Right. And given this new context and the restrictions, he fears that something will change in the way cinema is shown in India. What will change in the way cinema is shown in India?
Okay.
He feels that in Bollywood may go back in time to the world the way it was earlier.
Oh, you know, I earlier thought maybe it is the fact that you can't do action stunts now because there has to be some contact. So that's entire how we used to do earlier, like the fake stunts of it, like the Disham sound coming from.
As opposed to Rohit Shetty's real stunts these days.
My bad. So I thought we'll go back to the Disham sounds of the 80s, but I don't think
that's a very good guess. That's very close to the answer, but not the right answer.
Okay, could it be another trope of at least Indian cinema, which is intimacy related, that you can't have two people, you know, hugging or making love or things like that because, you know, you are close proximity. And Indian cinema always had that issue with showing proximity. We had bees, we had do phool kissing each other. So is that what he's saying, that because we can't show proximity on screen, maybe we'll have to go back to showing two flowers in the garden kind of a thing?
You're not confident of the answer, but you're absolutely right. This is exactly what Shujit Sarkar and a lot of filmmakers are worried about, that we will have to go back to those days where flowers will kiss each other, right? So there are restrictions on intimate scenes. So even Australia recently has actually said no to any sort of intimate kissing scenes in films anymore until the COVID situation is over. And the same rule is now being applied even in Bollywood, where no longer will you be allowed to do intimate scenes, right? Because of social distancing.
Okay.
And Shujit Sarkar is now worried that after so many decades, Indian cinema has finally accepted to showing intimate scenes between people of different genders, right? But now because of COVID, he's worried that we'll go back to those old days. And in fact, Sarkar actually documented a lot of the modern cinema instances of old-fashioned intimacy. For example, in Kya Kehna, which is an entire movie about premarital pregnancy, they actually don't show them having sex. They actually show them a really tight hand-holding shot, right? So that's how the movie shows sex, right? It's really tight and their fingers are moving.
And that is all there is.
Interestingly, one of the most famous movies of the recent decades is Aamir Khan's PK, right? And if you remember, in the entire movie, there's a joke about people making love in cars, but they actually don't show people making love, they show dancing cars. Right. So interesting about even in modern cinema. So 2012, Rani Mukherjee acted in this movie called Aiya, which basically shows Rani Mukherjee's scooter being filled with petrol. And that is a sort of a reference to her character having sex. So Shujit Sarkar is rightly worried that we may have to go back to such tacky representation of intimacy. But essentially, that's one of the biggest problems that filmmakers right now facing, that apart from shooting in general, they're also not allowed anymore to have intimate scenes between actors.
That is quite a problem to have. I can imagine the predicament. What would Ram Gopal Varma do? Are you ready for your next question?
Absolutely.
All right. So the Bombay Presidency,
yes,
was the administrative subdivision of British India.
Right.
So one of the states of British India, one can call it. And it stretched from northern Karnataka, the entire Konkan belt, parts of Maharashtra, Gujarat, and in fact, all the way up till Sindh.
Mm-hmm.
Now, in this entire region, Bombay was the capital. Bombay, the Portuguese gave to the British, and British made it their capital for this entire region. But that wasn't enough. There was a tiny port city called Aden in Yemen, which was also a British territory and was part of the Bombay Presidency.
Okay.
So on 23rd Feb 1839, Bombay Times and Journal of Commerce, which later became Times of India, reported mm-hmm. that the British have bought this port city of Aden off the coast of Yemen from a sheikh for 30,000 bucks.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the reason why this transaction was in the news and the reason why it was being controlled out of Bombay so far away from Yemen was because Aden was nearby another famous port. So Aden is close to a port. The port is famous for a certain product. And nowadays, the port's name also gives its name to that product's variants. So you have to tell me, what was this port, what was this product, which was so important for the British Empire that they had to settle capital of sorts in Bombay? They needed the Bombay Presidency to look after it. What was this port? What was the product?
I'm thinking of places in or around Yemen. And when you mention, did you say product or brand?
Not a brand. It's not a brand. It's more of a generic product.
And given the time period, my first guess was actually going to be opium. But I know opium was probably around India and China, but mm-hmm. nothing related to the Middle East.
True. Opium was, I mean, it did come through Bombay. It was one of the main exports out of Bombay, but it's not opium. But you are on the right track. So there was opium. There was, of course, tea, which came out of India, which the British got out.
Is this hashish?
No, it's not hashish. It's not a contraband material. So what I would suggest you look at the general position of Yemen.
Right.
What was Yemen close to? So there's Saudi Arabia.
Right.
Under that is Yemen.
Yes.
And next to that is Sudan, if I'm not mistaken. There is Gulf of Persia on one side and there is the Red Sea on one side. Does that, any of it, help you anywhere?
Oh, is it Jordan?
Jordan is not what I'm looking for.
Actually,
Africa is quite close.
Africa,
so,
yeah, probably.
Yemen.
Okay.
So Africa is just across the Gulf. And if I may say so,
mm-hmm.
in Africa, it is Ethiopia, which is quite close. So this product was taken out of Ethiopia, taken from a specific port, which came to be known with the name of the product. Then from there, the British took it to Aden, which was part of their property. And from there, they took it all the way to Bombay to set it in big ships and send it to all over the world, wherever the British needed it. And for a tiny time in history, from 1830s to 1860s, Bombay became the center of the trade for this one product.
Is it muslin or muslin?
No. The cloth?
Yes.
No. It's a consumable product. It's a
spice of
what do you say? Eatable. Yeah, something like an eatable or something like that.
Coffee.
Why do you think coffee?
Coffee originates from Yemen, at least in India. So I remember the story of Baba Budangiri, where Baba Budan is a man, and Baba Budangiri is the hill in Karnataka that's named after him. And he basically smuggled coffee from Yemen, if I'm not mistaken. I think coffee was originally discovered in Turkey, and then it became famous in Yemen and or probably Africa, and came to India through that. Yeah, I'm going to say coffee.
Coffee is the right answer. So coffee came out of Ethiopia, was one of the major exporters. So earlier, They used to take it via Egypt, but that was a long winding route. So the British thought, you know what, let's take it back to Bombay. And you are right, Baba, what was the name of the person?
Baba Budan. His name is Baba Budan.
Baba Budan. So Baba Budan apparently took it from Mecca. He was in Mecca. He found those beans and hid it in his beard. And he came down to South Karnataka. And that's how we get our coffee. And for a brief period of 30 years, Bombay was the center of the world coffee trade. And can you tell me, in 1864, why did it stop being the capital of coffee trade?
1864.
It's just a random question on top of it.
Something was discovered in South America?
No, something was invented rather.
Instant coffee?
So I'll tell you, actually, they made the Suez Canal. So from Africa, you could go directly to Europe and you didn't need to go to India. So India lost onto all this coffee monopoly in just 30 years. Also, the thing about the port, which was close to Aden, was that the port was called Mocha, which is how coffee, mocha, you get the connection, right?
Oh, nice. Yeah. It's interesting how, if you look at history of British India and, you know, Europeans coming to India, the reasons or the sort of the greed wasn't the greed for gold or wealth. It was actually either spices or some food item, or it was things like you know, calico cotton or muslin, or you know, the things that the women in Rome and Greece wanted, right? And the third category of products was actually drugs. So I find it interesting about you know, British interest in India was largely led by either food, spices, or clothes, or drugs.
I think it was whatever the rich wanted in Europe.
Yes, exactly.
So they wanted finest of clothes, they got it. They wanted the finest of drugs, they're like, yes, get it from, make farmers in Bihar and Bengal grow opium. We'll have it.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, if you read like Columbus's works, right, before he went on the quest to find India, it is all these kind of legends. Like, there's a legend apparently that, so what Columbus heard, and obviously these were all rumors, right? Because somebody would come back and say, I heard of this and I saw this and all of that.
True.
Somebody said that the world of India is actually ruled by one mysterious king called King Khan. Nobody knows his full name. It's just like randomly named King Khan. And apparently he lives in a palace which is like guarded by snakes, and that palace has a huge sort of case of jewelry or some sort of wealth, which is again like there's a snake sitting on top of that case. So it's interesting the kind of story that people have. Anyway, we can come back to the quiz.
Yeah. It's your turn now to ask me a question. Yeah.
Sure. So my last question was on India. So I'll go something. I'll ask a question about Hollywood right now. Right. So I'm sure Atta, you also may have seen the movie Matrix. Right. Now, Matrix has many interesting characters. And one of the lesser known characters who's part of the team with Morpheus, Trinity, is a character called Switch. Right. Now, there's a deliberate reason why this character is named as Switch. What is the reason for this character to be called Switch? So you can work it out as to why the character will be called Switch.
Yeah. So it just so happens that I follow you guys on Twitter. And the day it was the 20th anniversary of Matrix, you guys released an excellent long thread. And among the many things was the fact... So there's always this entire story of how the Matrix is sort of a coming out story.
Yes.
So these were two brothers, and then they came out as women and spoke about the whole experience.
Yes.
And from your thread, Twitter thread, I came to know the fact that they wanted to have an androgynous character called Switch. The idea being, I'm not sure now in which world it's a man and in which world it's a woman. So if, say, in the real world or in the Matrix, this person is a man, in the real world, it will be a woman. Or it's the other way around. I'm not so sure about it. But that is the idea of having a character called Switch. That there are two identities of sorts. One that person is living and one that person actually is. If I'm not mistaken.
Yes. In fact, even I always get confused as to which was the original intention. So just to clarify, you're absolutely right about the answer. The reason why the character is called Switch is because the character actually switches gender while in the Matrix and the real world. So interestingly... the character in the real world is a male character, is supposed to be a male character, but it's only in the Matrix world that the character would be shown as a woman character, right? And this is obviously a sort of an allegory to the Wachowski brothers at that time when they made the film, who have also undergone sex change and are now women, right? So that whole character was essentially a representation of their own internal struggle. And if, like, I don't know if you've gone down the rabbit hole, quote unquote, of the Matrix, but there was a time when in the 90s or the early 2000s when every person who was a nerd just went deep into what the Matrix means and each character, each reference. At that time, I remember reading about, because we were all excited about Matrix Reloaded and Matrix Revolutions. Yes, I remember the Wachowski brothers actually said they were reading the Bible, Homer's Odyssey, and so on, right? And a lot of references in the journey of Neo. And if you look at the idea of resurrection, right? He actually dies in the first movie and then he comes back. A lot of this also has sort of religious connotations. So it's interesting to see the kind of themes that the Wachowskis used in the Matrix series.
True, absolutely. Even, I think last year, I was speaking to a friend.
Yes.
We were just talking, like, Matrix came up, and she said that when she saw Matrix, she realized that, so the philosopher Dante, there is this concept of Dante's cave.
Yes.
That's what she told me, that basically Dante's cave is the person sitting in the cave, looking inside, and the person thinks that is the world. And that's the idea of it, until one day they turn around and they look outside the cave, and that's a whole different world. So somewhere in the Matrix, that is the idea, that a person thinks that is whatever the world is, until they one day they turn around and realize that there's a whole different thing to it. So yeah, there is a extremely quite a lot of philosophy that has gone into it, which just makes it so interesting even after 20 years.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I remember in the Matrix Revolution, which is the final sequence where before Avengers and before all the Marvel movies, there's this final sequence where the two men, Neo and Agent Smith, are essentially fighting in the air and destroying buildings, right? There's actually a track that's playing in the background, which actually uses words from the Upanishads, right? And it's interesting to see the kind of detailing that the Wachowskis used in their movies.
I really love the soundtrack.
Yeah, the soundtrack. I mean, everything, right? The soundtrack, the special effects. You had never seen something called bullet time before this. And after that, every single person wanted to do the freeze frame bullet time kind of sequence.
So, Akshay Kumar did it. All right, my next question is from the world of movies and video games. So, Hideo Kojima, I hope I got his name right, is a Japanese video game designer, director, producer, and writer. So, he has made this extremely famous Metal Gear series. And he is one of these very auteurs of gaming. So he makes these extremely cinematic games, essentially. And his latest game is a game called Death Stranding. Now, it features an A-list cast. Mads Mikkelsen is there, the actor. But Norman Reedus is there from The Walking Dead and Boondock Saints. It even features Guillermo del Toro, the director, and Nicholas Winding Refn, another director.
Oh, wow.
And one of the actors that it features is Lea Seydoux, who was the, I think I got her name right, Lea Seydoux. She was the Bond girl inspector, the last Bond movie. She's a French actress and she's in a whole lot of movies, and she was the last Bond girl. She plays a character called Fragile, and this character always carries an umbrella with her. So this, so the director, game designer, Kojima said that this character Fragile, who is always with the umbrella, is a hat tip to a famous movie and a book character. Can you tell me which famous movie, book, and a pop culture character is this a tribute to? One from the world of Hollywood.
Okay, so let me just try and... how many characters in Hollywood do we know who carry an umbrella? There is Mary Poppins.
Yes.
There is Avengers. I remember Ralph Fiennes, was it, who carries an umbrella? I think... none of the detectives carry an umbrella. So I can't think of it. Maybe say Mary Poppins?
It is Mary Poppins. Oh, wow, you're okay. Absolutely right. Well done.
I wasn't sure if the first guess will carry out to be right this time, but yeah.
So, Julie Andrews played Mary Poppins in 1964. The movie received 13 Academy Award nominations, which was for the longest time the most for a Disney movie.
Oh.
And have you seen the musical?
No. That's one of the few musicals I've not seen. Of that era. I've actually seen the rest of the ones with My Fair Ladies and so on.
Mm.
Mary Poppins somehow, even the remake and the original, I've just not gotten around to watching it.
So there's a famous song in there which I'm going to try this, which is basically a word which means amazing.
Mm-hmm.
Sort of on those lines. The word is supercalifragilisticexpialidocious is the word, and that's the name of the song.
Oh.
So from there, Kojima, supercalifragilisticexpialidocious, whatever, he took the fragile from there and took Mary Poppins from there, and he created another character in a video game called Death Stranding. So that was the entire story. Well done, you got it right on the first bounce itself. It was Mary Poppins.
Yeah. And for a question on video games, which I didn't think I would get, I really don't know anything about video games. Yeah.
But yeah, you did well.
Thank you.
Your turn now for the next question.
Okay, so we did some Hollywood last time. Mm. I'll go on the same theme, right? If you watched the Pixar animated movie Up, right? You remember the famous first 20 minutes of the movie where they show the love story from childhood till when they get married and finally the girl, lady passes away?
Mm.
During the 20 minutes...
I've heard of it,
yes,
but I've not watched the movie.
Okay. So the very famous scene, it's a beautifully shot, created scene of this young couple who from childhood, you know, like each other, and then they eventually get to marry each other, and then she dies, and the entire story is about the man's love for his wife. In one of the sequences, they show these two characters going to a church, getting married, and when they come back home, they show the husband essentially, you know, fixing the door by, you know, banging nails into it and nailing the door to the wall, and you see the woman sawing wood. Right, and this scene, this image of a woman sawing wood like carpentry and the man sort of banging nails on wood is common in Hollywood cinema. My question is, why do you see these kind of scenes of carpentry or woodwork in Hollywood cinema? So these are scenes or tropes that you see across cinema. Why do you see these kind of tropes?
Oh, of carpentry. Would a notebook be an example of this?
I have actually not watched Notebooks. I won't comment on it. It's possible. It's a common thing that you see across a lot of movies. Basically, when you see characters doing carpentry work in cinema, what does it represent?
What does it represent? Does it have to do with maybe some old Hollywood tradition of honoring the people behind the movies, and so they keep, you know, all the set makers or things like that, someone kept a scene in a movie and then it became a tradition of sorts?
That's a very nice guess. That would be great if they were sort of paying tribute to...
Yeah, so it's not that. What else could... It's... They are showing this carpentry scene of cutting off, or like of doing wood and things like that to represent something.
Yes.
Is it... I'm trying to think, are they talking about movies? Is that, or are they talking about something else?
I'll give you a clue. The movie that I mentioned is Up. So think of the context of an animated movie.
Animated movie.
I said that the characters, essentially you should see the love story from childhood when they meet in school, and then they finally go to church, they get married, and they come back home, and in their wedding dress, right, they're actually banging nails on the door and sawing wood. So what does it represent?
You know, okay, I'll not go too explicit with it, but is it a euphemism of sorts? Again, are we going back to the bees and the flowers here? Are we going into that territory?
Absolutely right. It is in that territory. You don't have to feel shy about it. Basically, it's euphemism for sex. So
I was going to go with what my carpentry teacher once told me. You know what's better than a nail on the wall? A screw on the floor. So I was going to say that.
Okay.
Tell me more about it. How did it come up?
What was the idea? Absolutely. Basically, in a lot of movies, right? Especially children's movies, right? Animated films.
Okay.
There's a lot of hidden context of references to sex, right? Some of them is deliberate. Right. In this case, it is deliberate. So Hollywood, for a longest period of time, whenever they cannot show sex, right? If it's a family-friendly movie, what they do is they show the characters being lovers, but actually doing carpentry. And that whole idea of a woman sort of doing carpentry work or a man banging nails is supposed to be some way sexual in nature. And that is a euphemism for sex. So in animated movies, because you can't show sex, a lot of times you'll see characters doing carpentry work because that's a euphemism for sex. If you remember Lion King, right? So Lion King, there's a scene where Simba runs away looking for his father. This is much when he's much older. And his father's image sort of disappears into the clouds, right? In that scene, actually, if you look very closely, you'll see the words S-E-X. Now, that is a prank, right? So I'm saying that there are two kinds of reference to sex that happen. One is deliberate and the other is or of accident or some prank. This is an example of a prank. But what usually see in animated movies is essentially these kind of references so that people don't get offended, but at the same time you're communicating the fact that they're having sex or they've consummated their marriage after the wedding, right? Another interesting example that I'd given during the quiz was if you watch Shrek, right? So there's a character who's essentially the villain, right? Who's this really short man and who's trying to get the princess. His name is... Do you remember the name?
No, I'm actually not.
So his name is Lord F-A-R-Q-A-A-D. Farquaad. Right? Which is actually, if I can say this on your podcast, it's a play on fuckwad. So it's interesting to see how many, films, animated films and children's films actually are sort of making these kind of clever references that kids may
so
miss.
That the kids won't know. Oh, all right. That's great. For the last question from my end, I have a question from the world of music. This British musician lost his fingers in an industrial accident. His fingertips were chopped off. And as a kid, he was really interested in playing the guitar. And he was told, you know, you can never play the guitar. He recovered and he was really sad about the fact that he could never play the guitar as he wanted to. But then a friend of his told him about a guitarist, a Belgian-born Romanian-French jazz guitarist called Django Reinhardt. And he had just three fingers.
Right.
And he was one of the best guitarists there ever was. So this guy, this young kid, thought, you know what? If Django can do, I can do so. And he started playing the guitar. And what he did, he covered his chopped off fingers. And he made these tiny leather covers for them. And when he started playing the guitar with those fingers, with those leather covers, a new sound emerged, which led to a different genre of music. Who is he? Or you can even tell me, what band was he from? And what genre of music did this guy eventually create?
So when you said Django Reinhardt, definitely, I mean, one of the greatest guitarists is how he's known. This story sounds familiar. I'm going to say Guns N' Roses slash?
No, it's actually much before that. So this band came out in the year 1968. Which pretty much is, you can say, when the genre came in. And the genre itself gets its name from another song which came a year or so ago. Does this help?
Yes. So I'm thinking of genres of music that get their name from songs. So if I'm not mistaken, this is true for grunge? No. 1970. So there is a story about how the phrase or the structure of those that phrase heavy and metal comes from a song. So
correct.
Is this heavy metal genre?
Yes. So that was a Steppenwolf song, Born to be Wild.
Yes, Steppenwolf. Yes, so Born to be Wild. I remember this in college that, you know, that's such a great song. But for some reason, trivia freaks loved it for the fact about the heavy metal. But it's such a good, good song. But it's remembered for things like heavy metal being mentioned in it.
Yes.
So heavy metal, this band then would be what?
Black Sabbath.
Oh, Sabbath, huh? Cool.
Yeah. So Black Sabbath was the band and Tony Iommi was the one of the founders and the guitarist. And basically he didn't have three fingers and he put leather covers and that just produced a different kind of sound. And the band and the genre gets its name, as you rightly said, from Heavy Metal Thunder, from the song Born to be Wild?
Yes.
And yeah, that was the question. Well done.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. Great questions, Root. Some really like interesting facts about Shashi Tharoor. Like that just blew my mind, because unfortunately, I think not enough people know about a lot of Indian stories, right? So it's always good to like discover new things. So this is a question for the audience. It's one of my favorite questions from our Zoom quizzes we've hosted over the last 3 months. In a particular city in North India, you will find wall paintings of Lord Ganesha with dates written on these wall paintings. And these dates keep on changing. So people essentially erase the original date and then update it with a different date. My question is, why do people do this? In a particular Indian city in northern India, you will find wall paintings of Lord Ganesha with dates written. For example, it would say 23rd January 2020. Right, and it would have some details around it, and then maybe if you see it in month of February, the date would have been replaced by another date, right? So this painting remains of Ganesha, but the dates keep changing. So why does this practice take place? It's a particular city in India. I'm not mentioning the name of the city just to restrict any form of Googling, but you can work it out. You can just think about Ganesha as to why people use that image of Ganesha in Hindu practices. And the fact that I gave a date should be a helpful clue.
And that marks the end of the episode. Thank you so much, everyone, for staying tuned in. And thank you so much, Sai, for taking part in this quiz. That's all for today. And if you'd like to send in the answer, all you have to do is send your answers to @QuizTimeIndia on Instagram or @PodcastStudio41 on Twitter, Instagram, and Studio41 on Facebook. Those are all the options. Take whichever one you like. Remember the announcement in the beginning. We have a special coming out for Independence Day in which you can take part. So send in an email, as I said earlier, to studio41podcast@gmail.com with the subject line Independence Day Podcast. What else is there? That's pretty much all of it. Have a good week. See you guys in the next episode.